I'm here with Catherine Bukowski, author of the Food Forest Community Handbook. Thank you so much for joining us, Catherine.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So to start with, I'm a little curious about your story and how you got involved with the studying of food forests in different communities. But first, for our listeners who have not heard of the food forest before, maybe edible forest garden, could you talk about what a food forest is?
Sure. A food forest is growing food in an ecological design that mimics a forest ecosystem. So trying to grow as many plants in a small space together as possible using the different vegetation layers to utilize all the light and resources of the site, kind of like you would see different layers in a forest ecosystem. And really recreating the relationships between those plants to minimize external inputs for irrigation or fertilization, because most forests don't need to be watered or fertilized.
So what would this look like, maybe as an example of what a food forest, a group of trees or plants that would be good, well-suited to a food forest here in the northeastern United States?
Well, everybody is fairly familiar with apple trees, so an apple tree could be sort of the overstory or main tree species, and then you would look for lower-growing shrubs underneath that. That could even potentially be hazelnut if it's a small-growing variety, or raspberries or blackberries that might grow a bit taller. You could have currants that are a little bit lower-growing, cranberries, blueberries, and down to the ground level would be oregano or thyme, some of the perennial herbs. You could even include higher-growing herbs in there as well.
Throw some chicken in there and you've got a full meal.
Yeah.
So now we got down to the ground. Can you talk a little bit about your history and sort of what inspired you on this journey to write this book?
Sure. I started off really interested in tropical ecosystems, actually, where food forest is a pretty common model that communities use to grow food right around their house and their homestead, rather than going all the way out to a farm or to make use of marginal land. And I've done a lot of international work, so I was interested in that model, and it was suggested to me that I start studying this in the U.S., and I thought, not really into that. But then after I wanted to go see a few sites, I thought, this is really interesting that this is making it into city centers and really teaching people a lot about different ways of growing food. So once I started visiting sites across the country, I did not want this research just to be in some journal that was hard to reach for people, and I really wanted the information out there because this is a growing movement. So we tried to get the information into a book that's accessible to the public.
I do appreciate it. As many of our regular listeners and volunteers know, we actually have a food forest in Troy. But for those of you who don't, the sanctuary's own Freedom Square is in fact a food forest, which you studied over the course of creating this book?
That's correct. I'm originally from Syracuse, New York, so I had heard about a food forest there, and then as people are talking and I was doing research, I found out about online research trying to find other places in New York. I saw the Sanctuary for Independent Media and contacted, I think I talked to Rebecca Rice first, and she started telling me sort of the history of Freedom Square. So I came up and did an interview with her, and then did a group meeting with some of the other members of the sanctuary, and thought it was a really interesting project. So it's definitely mentioned in the book.
So we can talk a little bit more about that site more specifically, because when people walk past it, they sort of recognize that it's a beautiful, accessible, open space, but they may not understand or see all of the different layers of food production that are incorporated into that space. So can you talk a little bit about some of the specific design considerations that you thought were really well thought out and well put into practice in Freedom Square?
Yeah, one thing that sticks out when I was doing the interviews is I had also tried doing my own food forest in Blacksburg, Virginia. Not my own, it's for the community at a community garden, but I was trying to save money when we were doing the budget for that food forest. So I invested in a lot of smaller plants to get it going. That's really hard to see the structure of a food forest when you're growing plants from seed or, when they're very young.
All right, 2-year-old tree just looks like a toothpick,
right,
or a chopstick coming out of the ground.
Yeah, it's really hard to visually get this idea of this varied structure. So Rebecca had suggested that they invested in older trees to sort of jumpstart people being able to see what a food forest is going to look like. And plus, these programs with the sanctuary have so many youth involved that a taller tree could withstand kids playing around it near. So I thought that, first of all, was like a great, great point that she brought up. Mostly when I visited it, it was maybe 4 years ago at this point, maybe. It was sort of polyculture patches, so that main fruit tree, and then some lower growing herbs right around it, and that was all fenced in. So they were small patches along the outside edge of a lot that had a lot more going on to interest the community coming in to use that area and start to get to know it. So even if they weren't interested in the plants at first, they could become interested in the plants because there's an area for kids to go biking, there's a stage to have music events or any type of like community rally, there's the mural, which had a, you know, huge artistic input from the community as well. There's a lot going on that draws people to the site. So it's really a community, like, sacred space, and on the outside edges is the food forest. And that will begin to fill in over time. It probably has. I haven't been back there in a while. And that's a great model to find out what are the other needs the community has. Let's focus on investing in those that the community sees. We're investing in you. And the plants and the interest in that are going to come along, you know, over time. So it's not trying to, like, shift and make an immediate change for people.
Right. I think that's the one thing that we really pride ourselves on at the sanctuary is engaging with the community instead of trying to impose things that we think are cool, as good as ideas that they are, without necessarily talking to people. Can you talk about some other examples of urban food forests that are successful around the country? I've heard a lot of news about one in Seattle, and you brought up one in Syracuse in your talk earlier today.
Yep, there's one in Syracuse, so if anyone's passing through there, it's on Salina Street. That one is with the Alchemical Nursery, and I think they've had a lot of other community partners, like a free health clinic as part of it. The Beacon Food Forest is the one that's in Seattle. Highly publicized, got a lot of attention, and sparked interest by a lot of other communities. Like, if they're doing it, why can't we? I know that the Bloomington Community Orchards in Bloomington, Indiana, that sparked interest for them to do basically a community orchard that over time then turned into a food forest because they started adding a lot of understory species and it became much more diversified rather than just an orchard. So I think that there's a variety, like there's a spectrum out there of what a food forest looks like and how people are using the term. It may just be a few small plants on the edge of a community garden plot. It could be an entire area that's continuously all these varied species and growing levels of perennial plants. And it could be an orchard that starts to fill in with some other species afterwards. So the whole idea of community food forests, I've tried mapping them. There's at least over 80. You can go to my website at www.communityfoodforest.com/map. And it maps them. I ask people to, you know, keep telling me about them so that if someone's interested, they can find one near them and get involved. Some other good examples that I can think of is Asheville, North Carolina. That's one of the oldest ones in the country. So if somebody wants to actually see what a mature food forest would look like over time, that's a great one to look at. Providence, Rhode Island has one. There's Boston Food Forests in Boston. They're implementing a bunch of different ones throughout the city, but one sort of demonstration site at the Audubon Nature Center. So quite a few up in the Northeast is too.
Of that temperate climate fruit. So for any potential budding permaculture activists or people who are interested in setting up a community food forest, either in our community in Troy or wherever you are, where they're listening, what advice would you have for folks who are interested in launching into a project like this?
They have to really focus on setting up the community support, the social system that will support a food forest. It's a great idea to put in a food forest, but location is important. Not just, as we talked about a little while ago, don't just pick a community where somebody not living in the community thinks it's a great idea to put one in there. Really need to have community support. Know it's what the local community that will be surrounding the space, what they need, as well as the community that's just interested in doing it. And will those two communities mesh? So raising community support, local community, as long as people that are interested, along with people that are interested like in the topic, gaining government support if possible for funding or permits and getting all the regulations in order to be able to put a food forest in. Even if it's on vacant land, a lot of times it's much better to try to secure some of the rights up front rather than putting in perennial plants and potentially losing access to that site like 5 years down the road when things are just starting to really produce. The first 3 to 5 years are pretty crucial. Plants are growing kind of slowly, and there needs to be a lot of different type of events and celebrations and other ways to involve the community and keep them interested, because perennial plants take a lot longer to produce. So in that downtime is the time to invest in really growing the community as well.
Right. These perennial plants, they produce sort of on a curve. So it's a slow growth. And then once they start going, you get food for decades.
Right. Yeah. So those first few years, really important to focus on community and how to get people involved. The first day planting is usually the most fun. You're not going to have any problem getting people. But the in-between time after
mulching,
that initial planting, yeah, the routine maintenance type of stuff, trying to build in potluck dinners or seasonal celebrations, things like that can really help.
Great. Well, as they say, the best time to plant a tree is 10 years ago. So I personally can't wait to get started. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, thank you.